Welcome again to the program In the Beginning. I'm Drew Henninger, and you've probably been wondering why the name of this program is In the Beginning. Well, I wanted to do a program like this just to let people know what happened in the beginning, and more importantly, to show how what happened in the beginning has something to do with you. Well, in the beginning, there was the earth with the plants, the animals, and there was man. But what is all this for? And why are we here? These are some universal questions. Well, in the beginning, God had a purpose in mind for all things. But what is this purpose? And what does it have to do with us? Well, when we look at the beginning of the Bible, the first book of the Bible, and the first chapter of the Bible, it is laid out for us the reason why God created man. It says there that God created man in His image, with His likeness, and He wanted man to have dominion over the fish and the cattle and the birds and the whole earth and over the creeping things. And in that little passage there, the two key words are the word image and the word dominion. These two words describe the reason why God created you and created me. Image and dominion. Now, what do these two words mean? First of all, image. Image is like a photograph. If I have a photograph of a tree or a video of a tree, and you look at the photograph, what you see is the image of the tree. You see the attributes of a tree. For instance, most trees are green, so you see green. You see the form of the branches, the shape of the leaves, and so on. Well, in the same way, you and I were created in the image of God that we might express the attributes of God. For instance, a tree is green, so a photograph of a tree expresses, or at least most trees are green, expresses that attribute or color, green. You and I were created in the image of God. Now, one attribute of God is love. Another one is joy, peace, patience. These are all attributes of God, and even honesty and telling the truth and so on. And when we express these attributes, we express God's nature. And this is why you and I were created. Now let's break this down a little bit. You and I were made in the image of God to express God, to express what God is. And one of God's attributes is love. And when you read the Bible, the whole Bible, from the beginning to the end, you discover how God's love is unconditional. But yet, a lot of times, our human love that we try to love with is somewhat conditional. It's fickle. One day we like people, the next day we're grumpy. Some people we like, some people we don't like. But yet, God's love is not this way. For instance, even Christians, and I'm a Christian, a born-again Christian, and a lot of us Christians have a problem, and that is we only like or love Christians, but we don't like people who are not Christians. We think they need to join our club, so to speak, or be like us, be exactly like us. But yet, when you read the Bible, you find out that God loves every single human being, even the ones that aren't Christian. How do you like that? Then, even among the Christians, some Christians who are supposedly brand X Christian, they don't like brand Y Christian. Why? Because they don't believe exactly, or they don't practice things exactly the way they do. And of course, the brand X Christians have their verses in the Bible to prove that what they're doing is the best and so on like that. But you see, that is not the expression of God. We were created to express God. And we were created to represent God on this earth. And when we express what God is, which is love, unconditional love, which means we accept anybody under any condition, then we express God Himself. Okay, so let's go back to why God created man. God created us, what? In His image, to express Him. Secondly, God created man with what? Dominion. Because God wanted man to represent Him on this earth. I hope you could remember those two words, image and dominion, because these two words describe the reason why God created man. Everything today that's designed and manufactured, generally speaking, has a definite purpose. For instance, an automobile or a car. When it's designed and manufactured, built and sold, and we buy one and use it, it has a definite purpose, and that is, it's a vehicle for travel. Well, you and I were made with what? A definite purpose. God created us, what? That we would express Him, and created us that we would represent Him on this earth. And just like a car or an automobile has different parts and functions, in the same way, when God created us, we have different parts and functions. So what are these parts? Okay, when we look at the very beginning of the Bible, in the book of Genesis, in the second chapter, there it describes not why God created man, but how God created man. And there it says that God took the dust of the ground and He formed man. And then it says that God breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. In this little passage, we can see the three main parts of man. Number one, God took the dust and He formed man. So this is what? Our physical part, our biological part. We have eyes, we have ears, we have hands, we have legs, we can do things. And this is man's body. Secondly, it says that man became a living soul. So this is the second part of man, man's soul. And the Greek word for soul is where we get the English word psychology. So man's soul is simply what? Man's psychology. And it's interesting, in the Bible, it even breaks down man's soul into various parts. First of all, man's soul consists of man's mind for thinking. We have thought process, we reason, we have logic, and so on. Secondly, we have what? Our emotions for feeling things. We feel joy, we feel pain. We feel happy, we feel depressed maybe, all kinds of feelings. That's what? Our emotions, and part of our soul. And the third part of our soul is our will, where we make decisions. Okay, so here we have what? Man's body, and we have man's soul. But when God created man with a third part, and that third part is our human spirit. It says there that God breathed into man the breath of life. Well, the word breath can also be translated spirit. So you could say what? God spirited into man the spirit of life. In fact, elsewhere in the Bible, in the book of Proverbs, the same kind of Hebrew words are used in a passage where it says it this way. It says, man's spirit is the lamp of the Lord. So here we have the formation of man's spirit. So we have these three parts. Number one, a body to contact the physical realm. Number two, a soul to contact and experience the psychological realm. But also, man has a spirit to contact God. Now, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, he also mentions these three parts. He's praying that God would sanctify our whole being. And he says that God, he was praying that God would sanctify your whole being, and he says, spirit and soul and body. It's interesting, he doesn't say spirit, comma, soul, and body, but the actually in the Greek, in the construction there, it says spirit and soul and body. Three parts. And it's very interesting in the Old Testament, in the book of Job. Job was very clear. He says that animals have a body, and they have a soul. But man has a spirit. I think you all realize that animals, of course, have a physical body. And they also have a soul. Maybe it's not as developed as man. For instance, they have a mind. They can think. And they have feelings. And they have a will. And they make decisions and so on. But yet man has another part. You see, man's spirit, man's human spirit, is what sets man apart from all the animals. Why? God gave man a human spirit. Have you ever heard about a monkey or an animal worshiping or building a temple or trying to find an idol to worship or searching out, seeking for the true God? You don't, because animals don't have that part of them that corresponds to God. They don't have a spirit. So God gave man a human spirit. And we have to ask the question, why did God give man a human spirit? If man is different than the animals because of our human spirit, something that we have that animals don't have, there must be a reason for it. Well, the answer to this question can be found in the book of John. In John chapter 4, Jesus was talking to a woman. And this woman was at the well there, and they were going back and forth with a conversation, and the woman asked Jesus a question about worship. And she was saying, well, where are we supposed to worship? It was kind of a controversial subject at the time. Are we supposed to go to this city or this temple? And well, what's your views on this, Jesus? So anyway, Jesus came back with an answer that she really didn't expect. And Jesus said it this way. He said that the Father is seeking, yes, worshipers, but he makes this remarkable statement. He says, God is spirit. And they that worship God must do it, what? In spirit and in reality. Now that phrase, or that little portion there where it says, God is spirit, is a key to why God gave us a human spirit. You see, that's like saying, God's substance is spirit. What God is made of is spirit. That's just like if I was out here and I had a table. Suppose I had a wooden table. And the table is in the physical realm. And I would use my eyes, my physical eyes, to see the table. I would use my hands to feel the table. And if I knock on it, my ears would hear certain kinds of sounds characteristic of wood. Why? Because the table is in the physical realm. Well, this verse says that God is spirit. And then it says that they that worship God must worship him in spirit and in reality. Now, the word worship simply means to contact, experience, or even, I would say, enjoy God. So for us to know God, for us to experience God, we need to use our human spirit. Now, I know today a lot of people are looking for God. And, well, where is God after all? And I heard this story kind of secondhand from Billy Graham when he was preaching. And he said that when the Russian cosmonauts went up, they looked around in outer space and they reported back on the radio and said, well, we looked around up here and we don't see God anywhere. So God must not exist. And Billy Graham's comment to that was, well, that's like an earthworm sticking his head out of the ground one morning and looking around saying, well, I don't see man anywhere. Man must not exist. Well, you have to ask the question, if you think God's in the physical realm, have you looked everywhere in this whole universe for God? Have you looked on the top of every hill, the bottom of every valley? Have you looked behind every tree? Have you looked on every planet, in every solar system, in every galaxy? Maybe God's out there and you haven't found him yet. So how can you say God isn't real or God doesn't exist if you haven't really looked the whole universe for him? Well, this verse tells us that God is not in that realm. God is spirit. For us to experience God, to contact God, to know God, we need to use our human spirit. And some people are looking for God in good feelings. And they're expecting that God's just going to come and give them, oh, just a surge of a good feeling or a happy feeling or joy and peace. And I'm not saying God doesn't come in that way. He does. But basically, God's source, God's substance is spirit. And some of us are searching in psychology and philosophy and, oh, if we only could know the meaning of the universe or understand the atom or understand the depths of physics. At one point in my life, I was studying to be a physicist. And actually, my main reason that I was going in that direction was because I thought if I could only get to the depth of the atom and the depth of what's at the bottom of how matter is put together and energy and so on, that I would find God. But listen, the Bible tells us that God's not in that realm. So God's not in the physical realm, although sometimes he comes in that way. And God's not in the psychological realm. God is spirit. So for us to know God, for us to worship God, to contact God, we have to use our human spirit. This is why God gave us a spirit. Now, let's use the example of an automobile. An automobile, again, is designed and manufactured. It has a specific purpose, and that is it should be able to drive 50, 60 miles an hour down the freeway, comfortable, smooth, safely, no problems. But sometimes in the morning we get out to go to work and there's a problem. Car doesn't start, it's got a flat tire, whatever it is, it doesn't work right. And when that happens, we're unhappy. We have to get the car fixed, we're late to work, we've got to spend money or time or whatever to resolve the problem. Well, in the same way, you and I were created in the image of God to express what God is. And when we don't express God, we're unhappy. Just like the car, when it doesn't operate properly, we're unhappy. Well, this problem or phenomenon in the Bible has a name. In fact, I think even going back to the subject of, you know, accepting other people and loving other people and so on, sometimes we try in ourselves to love people and we just can't do it. This problem in the Bible, or this phenomena where we know we should do a certain thing but we just can't do it, has a name, has a term. And you may be a little surprised the term that I use. But the term that the Bible used is sin, S-I-N. And you think, oh, now sin means to do something bad or evil. Well, yeah, it includes that. But we need to look at a real good working definition of what sin is. Paul, in the book of Romans, has a very good definition. He says, we all have sinned and fall short of God's glory. Now, what does that mean, fall short of God's glory? Well, let's go back to the car or the automobile. The glory of the automobile, as you've seen car commercials, is it's going down this pretty country road. It handles well. It's smooth. It's comfortable. It's safe and so on. Well, why? Because the glory of the automobile is simply what? What it should be doing. When you or I are functioning properly and doing what God created us to do, you could say we're expressing God's glory. But yet sometimes we fall short. And Paul says that we have sinned and fall short of God's glory. So as you can see, sin, yes, includes bad and evil and negative things, but also sometimes sin includes just our inability to do the very thing we know we should do. Now, what is God's answer to this problem or this dilemma of sin? What is God's answer to this problem? Well, you'll be surprised at the answer. The answer is Jesus Christ. Now you think, well, who is Jesus? I know about Jesus. He's somebody that lived 2,000 years ago. I've read about him. I've maybe studied the Bible, maybe read this and that about him. Some people even swear by him, and you may have heard positive things or negative things about him. But what I want to do is go through several important points concerning who Jesus Christ is. First of all, Jesus Christ is God. It says in John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word there is referring to Christ. It says the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So Jesus Christ is God, but wasn't happy just to stay in the heavens and be God, but he became a man. It says the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So he became a man. He came not as a big king to kind of rule everything at that time, but he came as a baby. And he grew up as a child, and he was a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And he was a teenager for a while. And when he was 30 years old, he started a little ministry, 3-year ministry there. And it's interesting, at the end of that time, he did something interesting. He died. And this was according to the prophecies in the Old Testament. And Jesus died on the cross. And you have to ask the question, why did he do this? Why? Because in his death, he terminated every negative thing in the universe, including the problem of sin, including the problem of evil in the universe. But after he died, 3 days later, as was prophesied, he rose from the dead. Now, why did he rise from the dead? Did he rise from the dead just so we could celebrate Easter once a year? Well, I think it's a lot more than this. He rose from the dead so that he could impart into us his resurrection life. That is, the life of God that can pass through death. So this Jesus Christ is not only God, not only man, not only did he die to terminate everything negative, including sin, sickness, the devil, all kinds of problems, but he rose from the dead. And that resurrection life is available to you and to me. Now, after he rose from the dead, then a little while later, he ascended. And it says that he became Lord and Christ. And it says that he's the Lord of lords and he's the King of kings. You know, sometimes it's nice to know somebody, if you work for a large company, nice to know somebody in upper management. Well, you could say that Jesus attained to the highest management position in the entire universe. You could say he's the executive of all the executives. He's the King of kings, the Lord of lords. So he's got the top, highest position in this entire universe. Now, after the ascension, on the day of Pentecost, he got poured out as the Spirit of power. And also in 1 Corinthians 15, it says that Jesus Christ became the life-giving Spirit. Why did he become the Spirit? He became the Spirit so that he could get into our spirit. Remember, God created us with a body, a soul, and a spirit. And at the end of Timothy, it says, "The Lord Jesus Christ be with your spirit." And even the end of Galatians, it says the same thing, "The Lord Jesus Christ be with your spirit." So we need to receive Jesus Christ. In John chapter 1, verse 12, it says that as many as received him, they got the right or the privilege to become the sons of God. So it's a matter of receiving Jesus Christ. Now, how do you receive Christ? You simply ask him to come in. And Paul, in the book of Romans, he says it this way. He says that whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Now, what does that word saved mean? Saved from what? Saved from some problem in the future? No, it means saved right now from our inability to please God, our inability to accept people that don't do things our way, or to accept people that we just have a hard time with. So, what does that mean? If we call upon the name of the Lord, we get saved. Now, calling on the Lord. Suppose out here where we're taping, there's somebody who's a friend of mine and he wants to help me and he's awake and he's not asleep and he's just anxious and willing to help me. If I just call his name, he'd come up and help me. Well, in the same way, our God today is not asleep, but he's awake. He's not dead, but he's alive. And he wants to come and help us. In fact, he wants to come and fill us and be everything to us. All we need to do is speak his name and just say, "Jesus, I need you to help me right now. I don't have much patience, I don't have much love, and I really need you to come and help me right now." And he'll come and be everything we need right then. Now, in the Old Testament, David, King David, had many experiences of calling upon the name of the Lord. Many times he was being pursued by his enemies. He felt very insecure, he felt very wobbly, and the way that David describes it in the Psalms, it's like his feet were in mud and they were slippery and he was ready to fall. And then it says many times, if you read in the book of Psalms, it says that David called upon the name of his God. And when he called upon the Lord in that way, he experienced something, salvation, not just a future salvation, but a salvation right then from his feelings of insecurity, from his wobbly feelings. And so David many times had this experience where God came to him just by him calling upon the name of the Lord. So I would invite you to try this. Call upon his name. Just say, "Jesus, I need your help. My human patience is short. I need you to fill me. My human love is short. I need you to come and fill me right now." I have a little illustration here that shows how we need to be filled with Jesus Christ. What I have over here is a glove. And this glove was made in the image of what? A hand. Just like you and I were made in the image of God, same way this glove was designed and manufactured in the image of my hand. This glove has four little fingers up here, and I have four, and it's got a thumb, and I've got a thumb, okay? And so this glove was created in the image of my hand. And it, you could say it somewhat expresses my hand. It has some of the attributes of my hand. But when you try with this glove to do something, like if I have this item here, and I try to do something with the glove, and I try to pick it up, it just doesn't have any ability. And that's like you and me. Sometimes we know we should be able to do something. We should be able to have patience in a certain situation. And we're going along and we realize that we've only got about 4.5 seconds of patience left. And we know we're going to lose it. And we try as much as we can, but sometimes we lose it. But listen, you and I were never intended on our own to serve God, to please God, to try to be patient. Just like this glove was never intended to be used in this fashion. It just doesn't have much ability. Okay, if I put the glove on, this glove was really designed to be filled with my hand. Now, look at it, it's filled with my hand, and not only does it better express my hand because it's more full, it's rounder, plus it has the motions of my hand, but also, look at it, it can do things. It can hold things, it can move things, it can pick up things, and so on like that. In the same way, you and I were created as a vessel to be filled with God. And when we're a vessel filled with God, we have a lot of ability. Just like this glove, by itself, it's very flabby. You and I, without God, we're very flabby in our Christian life. But when we get filled with God, we have a lot of ability. So I would encourage you to do what? To open yourself up and allow Jesus Christ to come in and be your patience. Let Him be the love of God in your heart, even towards other people. We hope you've enjoyed this segment of the program In the Beginning. I would like to encourage you to write to me and request a free set of outlines that I used in the preparation of this message. You can write to me at Drew Haniger, Post Office Box 12124, Scottsdale, Arizona, 85267. Thank you.